Welcome to Beyond the Habit.
Moving beyond everyday assumptions of what it means to be Catholic and live the gospel with two Catholic sisters.
Who are trying to find common ground, create unity, and talk about real life issues.
Led by two sisters of St. Joseph.
That's us. I'm Sister Erin McDonald.
And I'm Sister Colleen Gibson.
So Colleen, today we're going to be having a great conversation about prayer. And, you know, in preparation for our episode today, I was reflecting on just my own prayer journey and my own experiences of prayer, both the joys and the struggles of, you know, growing into prayer and relationship with God, and sort of the ups and downs of that. And so I don't know, like, were you in any way inspired to pray or reflect on some of that as you were, you know, thinking about this conversation today on Lent and on prayer?
Yeah, oh, for sure. I think, you know, our conversation with Joyce is so rich and we talk about so many different types of prayer and that, you know, like prayer is not a one size fits all. Like we try different things and at different times in our lives, we try different things and pray in different ways. I once had a spiritual director say to me, you know, like pray the way that works, not the way that doesn't. Like you can think there's one perfect way to pray. And like, when you think about Lent, oh, there are devotions I should do. Well, don't should on yourself, like get out of that and get into prayer. And I think sometimes prayer is about being in the comfort of Jesus's presence, being in the comfort of God and being held in that embrace. And sometimes I think we're invited to be uncomfortable in prayer. And I think like praying with that in this Lent of like, oh God, how are you inviting me to be uncomfortable in some ways? And how are you present in like where I resist or where there is discomfort? And I think of my whole life, you know, places where I've initially been like, ooh, I'm not so sure about this. I don't think this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But then you stick with it and you go, oh, there's something here. There's something to be learned, some way to grow.
Yeah. I mean, I also have had, you know, my ups and downs as well, especially in religious life, you know, as when you enter into vowed religious life, there's this process of formation, you know, kind of nun school, and you're really invited into lots of different styles of prayer, prayer practices. You're exposed to the charisms of many other congregations that also have different prayer styles and practices. And that was a real challenge and stretch for me. And I will name that, you know, as an extrovert and as someone who, especially in my younger years, was very like high-spirited, high energy, contemplative prayer was really hard for me, really hard. Mm. And I know a big part of why it was hard was just fundamentally, like I had to do a lot of work internally to get to a place of feeling comfortable of just sitting and being in prayer and not being attached to, you know, if people are into the Enneagram, I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. Okay. Pause here. Reflect on all of the crazy quirks of 3s.
Everybody Google Enneagram if you don't know what Enneagram is right now. And you'll learn a whole lot about Erin.
But I'm very focused on like doing. Like it's hard. It's hard to feel like, am I wasting time? I'm not doing it right. Nothing is happening. But I really feel like the deeper call for me though was to be comfortable just being and also being comfortable receiving God's unconditional love. And a lot of me struggled with like, for real, like me, I'm not worthy. I'm not enough. Like, it's hard. I think that's the harder part. Like, you know, prayer in action, going to a soup kitchen and serving a meal, you know, seeing the face of Christ in my brothers and sisters and persons who are, you know, suffering, for me was like a relief. Like, oh, for sure. I'm a social worker, like right up my alley. But like, just sit and be and believe that I'm unconditionally loved, I'm out. That's not, I can't, I'm so uncomfortable. Like that was a real struggle. I still struggle at times, but that's a growing point. And also I think your point there, Colleen, of like just trust the process some too. Like, don't get too caught up. Like, for me, that's, I got caught up in like, am I doing it right? And, you know, I don't feel it and I don't know anything. I don't know what's happening. Like, you know, to just be and let it flow and let it be free. And, you know, I don't know if you've had any struggles with prayer, but I suspect you have in your journey.
Yeah, well, and I think like picking up on what you just said, like, you know, there's an invitation in prayer to get to know God and to sit in that space, and like contemplation can look like that. But prayer is also about knowing and loving ourselves and growing more deeply in that relationship. And so like when we know ourselves, we can say like, ooh, that's not the prayer practice that's going to work for me because I know myself, but also being stretched by the practice and learning in the process. And I am a good introvert. Somebody can guess my number. I'm not going to tell you my Enneagram number now. That's another episode. But I love words. And so I'll journal. I will often sit in quiet and contemplate as an introvert like that. That's a comfortable space for me. And when I was a novice, so very early in my formation, and as a novice, you spend a lot of time praying. My spiritual director, when I would go and meet with her at the end of every session, she would say to me, you know, Colleen, what are you doing to have fun? Like, what are you doing for fun this month?
I'm upset. My spiritual director never said that to me.
Yeah, well, maybe you need a different spiritual director, or you are already having fun. And as a novice, I guess I enjoyed my novitiate, but I guess I wasn't having enough, you know, classic fun. And she said to me, you know, the thing I'm going to advise you to do, or the prayer practice I'm going to give you for the month ahead, is she would say to me, I want you to go out to dinner. I want you to go out for a date with Jesus or with God. And so I would go to, you know, she lived in this neighborhood that had this great Vietnamese restaurant. And so I would go and get pho, this soup, and you get a big bowl of soup. It's like the size of your head. And I would sit there and have my journal next to me closed. And they would bring out this soup. And, you know, you could think, oh, it might be sad to be like sitting at a table by yourself in a restaurant. And I was like, I'm just sitting here like mixing in all these spices and herbs and things into this soup. And then like to sit and look out the window and watch people to like revel in the deliciousness of this soup and the meal. And then to like picture and imagine, you know, God sitting across from me and like having these, you know, one-on-ones with God and like just reveling in that. But also being like, when I would tell people, like now, I'm sure people are listening to this going, oh, she's crazy. She's lost her marbles. Like, but there was something about that. Like it was just uncomfortable enough that when I did it, I discovered brand new things about myself and new things about God. And I could hear in a different way, surrounded by people speaking all different languages and slurping soup and noodles and willing to splash a little bit.
Yeah.
It was a great gift. So I think, you know, sometimes prayer can be difficult, and that's just, you know, the honest truth of it. And we stick with it. You know, and when we're tempted to say like, oh, I should give up, maybe the invitation is, you know, to try praying in a different way, or to say to God, what is it that is making this so difficult? Like to have that conversation, to turn it back, to say like, you don't have to figure it out on your own. Like that's my pitfall. It's like, oh, I have to figure this out. Be like, actually, prayer is a conversation. Prayer is a relationship with God. And so say, God, hey, God, what do you think I should be praying about? What do you think we should be talking about right now? And so see where that leads us.
Yeah. Or in what way? And so, you know, just the reflection on like prayer can take so many different forms, and encouraging listeners, there is such a wealth of prayer resources out there, whether it's art or, you know, body prayer, or, you know, using running or yoga, or, you know, devotionals and rosaries. So just encouraging folks to push through and be courageous and play with prayer and have fun. And, you know, remember that you are loved unconditionally and that God is not measuring your prayer success.
Amen, sister. And, you know, today we have a great guide to lead us in that. And so we're going to be joined by Joyce Rupp, and we're going to hear about her Lenten devotional. So we're so excited about this conversation. So let's get to it. Today, we're going to be talking with Joyce Rupp, a sister of the Servants of Mary, also known as the Servites. Joyce is a renowned writer, international retreat leader, and conference speaker. She's the author of numerous best-selling books, including Praying Our Goodbyes, Open the Door, and Fragments of Your Ancient Name. Her newest book is a Lenten devotional entitled Jesus, Guide of My Life.
Joyce has a bachelor's degree in English, a master's of religious education, and a master's in transpersonal psychology. In addition to her writing and retreat work, Joyce has also served as a hospice volunteer for 15 years. She currently lives in Des Moines, Iowa, and we're so excited to talk with Joyce today.
Welcome, Joyce.
Hey, thank you. Thanks to both of you. I'm happy to be here in this special time that we're going to have together here. And just having met you, I'm looking forward to our conversation. So
great.
We are thrilled to have you, Joyce. You know, your name precedes you, but I think just to have a nice conversation among sisters is always a gift. So I wonder, you know, last night I was sitting in my community room. I was saying to Erin before we got on, I was sitting in my community room with the sisters I live with. And I said, if you could ask Joyce Rupp one question, what would it be? And they sat, they thought of all different questions. So maybe I'll get to their questions later. But then I also asked a series of my friends, you know, outside of religious life. I said, oh, if you could ask Joyce Rupp any question. And one of my friends quite honestly said, well, who is Joyce Rupp? And
oh,
so
I wonder,
you know, Joyce, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself just to begin with.
That's great. Yeah. So if I were meeting someone who had never met before, probably the first thing that I would just say is that I'm a woman of the earth. And that I believe strongly in the innate goodness in every individual. I'm very connected to earth because I grew up in rural Iowa. Mm. And I feel a closeness to nature. And that's really where I get my greatest inspiration for writing. And a lot of times is that I have a contemplative nature. And I believe strongly in relationships, that they are what nurture my spiritual life. So. Oh, that's basically what I might say. And then I might jaw on and on later.
We'll weave more of that in. No worries.
You spend a lifetime figuring out who you are.
Right. That's a question probably always evolving for all of us, right?
Yeah. Oh, it's true. I just wrote a little essay about, you know, no matter what age we are, we're always asking the question, who am I? Mm-hmm. Because of our environment and our inner and outer circumstances, we can never say for sure who am I, which I mm-hmm. think is a good thing. You know, we live in mystery, so it's good.
I think that is powerful. And, you know, it's prophetic in its own way. I work in campus ministry, so I work with mm-hmm. a lot of young people, and that's the burning question mm-hmm. for young people. And sometimes the work for me is helping young people to see that this is a question that all of us are living into in new ways, you know, as we age, that it's not a finite yeah. process, you know?
Yeah.
So I too, funny, I was giggling as Colleen was starting, because I also asked the sister I live with, you know, immediately going, we're going to talk to Sister Joyce Rupp and what might be questions you would have. And in our car ride yesterday, we were chatting about that. And so one of the things I think that would be wonderful to tell us a little more about is your community, you know, the Servites, another congregation yeah. that I think it would be great for listeners to just know a little bit more about. So could you tell us a bit about your community?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. You know, our central gift or charism is compassion. Mary at the foot of the cross. And it's just so timely in our global suffering world right now. I was drawn to my community in high school because I really liked the sisters I had for teachers, but I never wanted to be one of them. I just fought it all the time. So I went to a state college so I wouldn't have any reminders of religious life. And well, you know how it goes. One of my professors was Catholic and a very dedicated Catholic. And so she called me in one day for a little conference and she asked me if I'd ever thought about religious life, which about blew me away. And I thought, well, she sees something I don't, so I'll try it. I'm sure I won't like it. And anyway, I got there and I've stayed ever since. But I really didn't, you know, when I was in high school, I didn't pay any attention to their charism or gifts or whatever focus was. And I just was really drawn to that. You know, our image of Mary at the foot of the cross or Michelangelo's Pietà, it's really been at the heart of who I am ever since. And we're a small community compared to a lot. I mean, when I entered, we only 350 at that time and stayed about that number for quite a while, now much smaller. But I feel a lot of kinship with my community. I know everyone by name and in person. So that's very helpful. And I feel a lot of support from my community because of that. Our founder is Marie Guillot, who was a French teacher who lived in utter poverty at the time, and other teachers joined her. And they eventually moved to England. And that's where they became known as Servants of Mary. But originally, they were really called Sisters of Compassion. And I always wish we could get back to that name, because I think it speaks loudly in our world today. So, yeah.
I love that, Joyce. I think, you know, each one of our stories is unique, but so often, I know in my own story, in Erin's story, in so many sisters' stories, it's this, you know, oh, well, there was something appealing, but I thought I'll try it out. And then, yeah, I'll be able to move past this. It's just kind of a phase. And then you go, oh, the Holy Spirit is a tricky thing that she just kind of gets in there and makes her way. And you have this unique kind of vocation as a writer, and doing that kind of spiritual guide. I've heard you referred to, you know, as a spiritual midwife. And just listening to you talk about your congregation, you know, I think we each embody the charism, kind of the gift that our orders offer to the world. And you framing it in terms of, you know, Servites are all about compassion. And I know you've done a lot of work on boundless compassion. And so I wonder if you could speak a little bit about, you know, what is boundless compassion? And also, how has your community, in that sense, influenced your writing and influenced, you know, how you live out that that almost secondary or other vocation as a writer?
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's really interesting, Colleen, because, you know, the book that I wrote, my second book that I wrote back in the mid-80s, is the one that really set me as a writer, I would say, you know, in the larger world. And it was Praying Our Goodbyes. It was not about not just the suffering of sorrow from death, but I was just becoming so aware of the many kinds of suffering in our world. We talked earlier about just that self-identity and how that can be very challenging and confusing and sometimes distressful, not knowing for sure, you know, who am I? And, you know, so that has, it has influenced a lot. Not all of my writing is focused on some aspect of suffering, but it certainly threads through it a lot. And, I, you know, for years, I gave a lot of retreats, led retreats on, you know, praying our goodbyes. And I've learned so much from people that I have been with. And I would say that's what greatly influences my writing. My community members and the, you know, the kind of devotions that we've had to Mary, you know, there's a the Rosary of the Seven Sorrows of Mary that most people don't know about. And, you know, we had different devotions to Mary and the suffering that Mary experienced. And so then when I wrote my book, Your Sorrow is My Sorrow, which is on the Seven Sorrows of Mary, I have had so many people who have written to me. I remember when the book first came out, I had a phone call actually from a woman in the eastern part of the U.S., and her young son had been killed, kidnapped and killed. And she was starting a group for mothers of young people who had been murdered. And she said that that book was such a help for her, and she was going to start a group with that book. So it's that kind of thing. So my community's charism has been a seed for my writing, but it has extended far beyond that. And as far as boundless compassion goes, that really, that came to me when I was studying transpersonal psych. I chose to study at the Buddhist Institute in Boulder, Colorado, and it's now Naropa University. And I had never been in a totally non-Christian environment, and it was a fabulous experience for me. And one of the things that I learned very early on is that Buddhism is all about compassion. And so tying that into what I had gained from my community's experience and focus has really been marvelous. And so the two of those together, I think, are very strong components for how we can move in our world today.
Yeah. And as you're talking, I'm wondering about how your personal prayer life is, I'm assuming, probably very intertwined with your writing. You're, you know, telling us a lot about how the lived experience of being with people and the experience of people's stories and suffering and wondering if you have any thoughts to offer, you know, on that, like how is your personal prayer life a part of your writing process? How has it maybe influenced each other or stretched you in some way? Or, you know, I imagine there's probably some interesting revelations that have come in the process of your own writing and reflecting. But maybe if you could tell us a little more about your process.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Erin. A lot of my writing comes in the context of prayer. And at first I just want to say that I say this because I'm a spiritual companion. And when I first started out, I thought everybody had to pray the way I do, you know, which is, you know, at least an hour in the morning for meditation and reflection and all that. But there are many ways to pray. And for an extrovert, I think there are more active ways to be in prayer. But for myself as a writer, reflection's really essential for me. And so I get up early. I'm a morning person. And so I usually have an hour and a half in the morning where I do some meditation, reflection, journaling, and then I'll go to my writing. So like my book, Fragments of Your Ancient Name, were 365 names for the divine, that one for each day of the year. You know, I wrote those at the end of my prayer time. And honestly, when I got the edited manuscript back from the publishing company, I thought they'd edited everything. I didn't realize I had written what I'd written. It was a pretty astounding. You probably found that too in your journal, and you go back and you go, who wrote this, you know? But it's been that kind of thing that for me, it's just essential that it comes from the deeper part of me. But in my journaling, you know, I journal every day. I write something reflecting on the day before. So a lot of my writing then comes out of my connection to daily life. You know, like I was just thinking yesterday, I walk every day for an hour outside. And so I was walking yesterday, and all of a sudden I looked, and this red-tailed hawk flew up just about 20 feet from right in front of me. And it was just gorgeous to see. But I was so upset with myself for being distracted and being unmindful, because otherwise I would have stopped and it would not have flown away right away. And that got me thinking about, you know, our world today and how distracted and hurried and pushed and shoved around we are with everything that we're doing, and how hard it is for people to stop and be mindful. And I thought, if I've been trained to do this through the years and it's become my practice, how much more difficult for people that haven't had that, that practice, that spiritual practice through the years. So I'm just really aware of, when I speak about it, that I have to speak about it in the context of a larger world and what people are experiencing. So, yeah. Mm.
Mm. Yeah, I think that contextualizing, Joyce, is so important to recognize that, like, our experience is only our experience. And so we can't know what someone else's experience. We can't pray in this. Someone, this is a prayer practice that works for me. And you might try it and say, oh, that does not work for
you. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think as you're speaking, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, Flannery O'Connor talks about, you know, story, and sometimes we need stories to put words on experiences, and we need every word of the story in order to make sense of it. And in you talking about kind of, you know, offering spiritual guidance, creating, really, I think what your writing does in some ways is it creates a space to hold other people's stories, or for people to pour their experience into and unpack it and hold it in that way. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, in the kind of that context of, you know, the larger world and the suffering that is around us and the call to compassion, I wonder, you know, we've heard a little bit about how you stay grounded as a person, but how would you, you know, for our listeners, how might you advise them in facing the issue of, like, compassion fatigue, or, you know, trying to hold all the suffering of the world? How have you found, you know, in your own practice, a way in which to do that? Or what would you invite our listeners to in trying to face that?
Thank you. That's really a great question. You know, the other day I was reflecting again on how one of the things I've learned through Buddhism actually was self-compassion. And there's been a lot written on it now. And out of the Christian dimension, I think so many times, and I've heard people say this, is that, oh, self-compassion means that you're too focused on yourself. You know, it's narcissistic, or it's, you know, we're always supposed to be thinking about other people and looking out for them, which is, you know, it's true. And it's certainly a part of the message of Jesus. But if we aren't kind to ourselves, and if we're not caring for ourselves, it's going to be hard for us to care for other people. And so what I really encourage people to do, and I did this in Boundless Compassion, is, you know, be attentive to what hurts. And in compassion fatigue, you know, give yourself time to rest. I was just looking at, you know, this last Lenten book, Jesus' Guide to My Life. And one of the essays I have in there is his invitation to come to him, you know, when people are weary and burdened. In fact, I'm going to just read a little piece of that if you don't
mind. Oh, great.
And let me say this too, you know, I learned this in my community early on. It was called spiritual reading then. I would call it inspired reading today. But if you just find a nugget of something that can carry you through the day, just read it before you go to work or you go out for the day, or read it the last thing before you go to bed at night, because you'll carry that with you into your night dreams. So the reflections that I wrote are only about 350 words for each day. I think people don't need a whole lot. And so with self-compassion, when I was writing this, come to me, the second part of this, I said, however we're currently experiencing life, let us focus on the heartening invitation Jesus gave to his disciples and now extends to us. And this is a quote. Come to me, come and I will teach you how to carry peace within you. Let me be a part of your life. Come to me and lean on my love. If you accept this invitation, your burdens may not go away, but they will feel lighter and more manageable. I have strength enough to see you through to better days. And so my hope in writing that, it would draw people to go to their inner strength. And as they went through that day, to say, you know, I'm enough. I have enough within me that I can carry whatever burdens I have. And I will find meaning in them as I manage my life this day. So self-compassion to me is just absolutely vital. And I wrote a whole section, and, you know, I've yet to ever hear a homily or a sermon about Jesus being self-compassionate, but there are so many ways that he was self-compassionate, from going away to the mountains to pray, to, you know, asking his friends to be with him when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane. Look, I can't manage this by myself. Would you come and be with me in this? I mean, there's just a lot of ways that he cared for himself when he was hurting. So
I love that. And it feels very relevant, but I think there's a bit of our culture that sort of categorizes that self-compassion or self-care as being kind of selfish or wasteful. You know, I hear that a lot. Like, I feel like I'm wasting time by, you know, you're talking about sitting for an hour and a half in the morning in prayer and reflection. And now they're also naming, there are very real struggles. I mean, we have to own the fact sometimes people have, you know, jobs and families and small children, things that are very real, understandable obstacles to being able to take that time for oneself to cultivate, you know, that self-compassion and self-reflection. And really, I think we're talking about is like sitting in Christ's love for us. And so what I'm getting at is, I think your witness and story is very powerful and prophetic for helping to push that edge of, you know, Christ as well embraced self-compassion. And we too need to do that and can do that, even if it's in smaller pieces. And that's part of what I love about your new book, The Jesus Guide of My Life, is it feels very accessible. And I'm wondering if you did that on purpose, that, you know, this is a way that folks can take time. Like, here we are in Lent, and a lot of people focus on giving up chocolate, which is good. Wonderful. Love that. But also, how do we maybe incorporate a little more prayer into our life? That could be a Lenten commitment, is to say, I'm going to work at 5 minutes a day, you know, and you're talking about morning, evening. So was that part of your approach to writing this devotional, is making that prayer time maybe a bit more accessible for people? Or tell us more about that maybe.
Yeah. Thanks, Darren. You know, that's exactly what I hoped. And that's why those reflections are so short, you know, and they just have a very brief, like 5 or 6 line prayer at the end of them, enough to carry a person into the day. But I will say this too, is that I'm all about intention. I think intention's everything. You know, for a person, I'm thinking of, like, I have cousins who have young children here in the city, and there's no way to, unless they get up very early, which one of them does, to have some quiet time. You know, they're instantly involved in activity. However, most of them take a shower every day, you know, and if you're intentional, that can be your prayer time when you're in the shower, or if you're taking the subway or you're driving to work, you know, just turn off the music or don't have your phone on, whatever. And that's the time to be reflective. And so if you have that little nugget of inspiration when you leave, you can return to that again at that time. And some people, you know, if they have an office job and they take a break, they can be intentional. Okay, that's going to be my time of day right now. It's going to be mid-morning, or maybe it's going to be right after I have my lunch or something. But it's all about being intentional. And without that, I don't know how it can happen, really. But I go back to have, and for myself, you know, I want to read something every morning that I take with me into the day so that I can return to it, especially if I'm thinking, this day's a real drag, or, you know, I didn't plan for this, and not get carried away with my negativity or my emotional response. So,
And there's a profound simplicity, I think, to that, Joyce, of, you know, it's profound in the sense of, like, you only need a little nugget. You only need that time when you're in the shower. You could have much more, but, you know, these things offer us something to hold on to. A buoy that can carry us through the day or lead us into our dreams for the night to come into the next day. And I think the gift of that, because we can think, you know, we need to have it all figured out, or, oh, I need to sit down with the Summa.
Did you just make a Summa Theologica reference there?
You know, big books on spirituality scare people today, and they really turn people off. And it's just the reality, like, short is better. But it's got to be a really core message to it. That's why, you know, I don't like a lot of blogs, because people wander around forever and they take up my time to get to the point. Now, some people are fine with it, but I am not. Anyway, that's kind of my thing, and I'm staying with it.
Well, and I think it's encouraging, Joyce, like when you said you got the book back and you said, like, oh, they must have edited this, because, you know, who wrote this? And, like, to think, oh, this book that we prepared for and, you know, are moving through Lent with, to kind of say, like, oh, Joyce wrote this at the end of her prayer period. She was writing little things down. It was not like, oh, Joyce sits down and after prayer every day, she writes a book. She writes a whole book. Yeah. No. You write a little prayer here. You write one sentence and it sticks with you. And I think it invites, you know, somewhere in the book, you talk about fresh approaches to spiritual growth and how we're invited to do that, to take a fresh approach. And I think Lent as a season is kind of set aside. It invites us to a new space to take a fresh approach. And I wonder for you as a writer, because this is, if I'm not mistaken, it's the third in a trilogy of Lent books. I wonder, you know, how did you embrace this idea of fresh approaches? You know, Lent can feel stale sometimes, you know, prayer, almsgiving, fasting. Oh, it's same old. How do you get a fresh approach on that?
Yeah. You know, Colleen, I really am glad for that question, because, you know, a lot of people say, and I think it's true, that writers write for themselves, you know, it comes out of their need or whatever. And for me, Lent, first of all, I think that Lent so many times is approached as such a negative kind of thing. And I wanted to change that, to have it be more inspirational. And instead of duty, to have it be more of a desire to want to change, you know, that old hidden message of you're a terrible person and you ought to shape up, you know, to change that to you have so much potential here for even further goodness. And so what can happen during Lent? What can you be intentional about during Lent that's going to draw forth more of your potential for goodness? And so, you know, the first Lenten book I wrote was Jesus, Friend of My Soul. And every day was about a quality of Jesus, a good quality. Well, all the qualities of him are good, but focusing on one of those. And then how is that quality in my life, or how can I draw that forth from my life? And so this last one, Guide of My Life, are really about the teachings. And I tried to approach those in a way that they're positive. You know, how can each of those teachings be helpful for me? And I did some of them on the, I reflected some of them on the parables, which I think sometimes are a little more difficult for people. And one of mine that I just love is the one about the merchant that goes in search of the pearl of great price and will do anything, sell everything for this pearl of great price. And the pearl of great price that Jesus teaches is really about the realm of love. People call it the kingdom of God, but it really means it's the realm of love. And so trying to approach Lent in a more positive way and in a way that's going to influence my life so that not just for myself personally, but how I affect the larger world. And again, there's so many ways to do that. You know, I'm just thinking about how I've done that in the past in years. A couple of years ago, I was reflecting on, I think one of the beautiful qualities of Jesus is how kind he was, especially to people who were disenfranchised and or unaccepted in society or didn't have a lot of self-worth, didn't feel good about themselves. And so I decided every day of Lent, I was going to deliberately do some act of kindness, whether that was how I was with another person, or with a stranger, by sending an affirming note to someone. And I loved doing that. And every day I would, at the end of the day, I'd write down, you know, I'd reflect, what did I do or what did I forget to do today? And it just was such, it really strengthened my ability to be kind. And I have to say, it has stayed with me since then, this whole notion of kindness in every day. I think it's just one of the biggest qualities that we need right now in our world at large and personally as well. I think it can make a great difference. So that's kind of a long response to you, Colleen, but I just believe Lent, I want to inspire people in Lent to really see how they can grow in knowing their goodness and expressing that goodness to other people when they're with other people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Joyce, I so appreciate that. I mean, you referenced the reflection on the pearl, and that mm-hmm. it was one that particularly stood out to me because you talk about like this yearning, you know, this yearning for like the truest of loves. And mm-hmm. I think that way of framing Lent in terms of kindness, what can we do? What are Jesus's teachings? That God longs for us to sit and be in love, to soak that up, and then that will be reflected in who we are and how we are in the world.
Yeah. You know, Colleen, that goes back to, I think, the whole basic of prayer, because to really, when I begin my prayer, the first thing that I do, I have a couple of prayers I've memorized, and they involve reaffirming that I have this great love within me, you know, this divinity that dwells within, and the Christ love that was so expressed in Jesus when he was living those years. So yeah, beginning there and that, see, if carrying that through the day, then, you know, I'm drawn to this great love. I have this love within me. I want to go and visit this love. This love can permeate my whole life. It can go forth from me. And that's something I learned in Buddhism, you know, is really that we have this energy. Love is an energy. And so we can actually gather that love within us and send it forth. And I think that's something a person can do anywhere, anytime. It's pretty hard to do when you're with someone you don't particularly like. So that could be a good Lenten practice. take it from experience, I know.
Well, and I think your point is really powerful. I mean, myself reflecting on Lent, that feels like a powerful way to enter into the Lenten season. I'm going to work on cultivating my friendship with Christ. because mm-hmm. that for me is about if I am developing my relationship with Christ as a friend, as that, you know, beloved, compassionate, unconditional, loving companion, that I think can often be some of the more uncomfortable parts of, you know, our faith and our life. Like, I think it's hard. I mean, I've struggled with that in my own prayer journey of like really comprehending how loved I am by mm-hmm. Christ, by God. But yeah. yet that's so important in terms of like, I think what I'm hearing you talk about is like, the more I can anchor myself, you know, sort of almost like marinate myself in Christ's love, yeah. then that fuels me, that feeds me. That's the ways in which I can go forth mm-hmm. and love the dear neighbor. So that's how it works. And I think I need to also make that intentional of mm-hmm. cultivating that space. And that's what speaks to me when you talk about those quiet moments of just being. For me, what we're saying is trying to connect with that love energy of Christ mm-hmm. because yeah. it's so essential to my core. And you know, that could be a Lenten intention is I'm going to 5 minutes every day, 10 minutes, like I'm going to sit and just meditate on my friendship with Christ. And I think your book really pulls that out, really focusing on Christ as the person, as the friend, as the someone you can really relate to on a human level. And I don't know if you could speak a little more about that, because I suspect that was intentional to really lean into those compassionate, human, real parts of who Jesus is in a way that we can hopefully find as a good connection point.
Yeah. Erin, well, you got it, Erin. And I may use your term sometime. I love that marinating in Christ's love. That's great. You know,
my formation directors would be very proud.
I might steal that from you. But anyway, you know, my whole focus in all three of these Lenten books has been the humanity of Jesus. I think, and as children grow up, it's all the focus is on the divinity so many times. And, you know, but to relate to a real person, and the person of Jesus just comes across in so many ways as a person of such goodness, you know, and through his humanity, how he was with other people, not just what he taught, he's real, you know, he's fully human. And that is how I think we really can connect. You know, it's not some nebulous love out there someplace or some sphere of mystery, but really, this person that exudes kindness, exudes care, exudes understanding, exudes sympathy for people who are sorrowful, all of those kinds of things. He understands people that don't always get it. You know, I'm thinking of how his relationship with Peter, for example. Peter's always saying crazy things, and you know, he didn't boot him out from the discipleship. You know, he kept him in there, and he recognized, you know, that this guy is still growing. He's not, you know, he isn't perfect person as none of us are. And so I'm really glad that you emphasize that humanity, Erin, because it's just vital. In fact, I don't know how a person can have a really fully meaningful relationship that affects one's life and action unless they're also really have that personal relationship as you have described it. So thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And that sense of, I love the prayer that you kind of close the book with, Joyce, Jesus as guide. And so I wonder if you would be willing to read that, and then maybe we could talk about just that image of Jesus as guide.
Oh, of the prayer for guidance. That you're...
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a beautiful, and I think it, for us to be able to hear it in your own voice would be a gift.
Thank you. I'd be glad to. I've got my book right here. So the prayer for guidance. Trusted guide, you are my mentor and inspiration, my home of good choices and decisions. You help me search with confidence as I find my way to inner peace. Please gather your wisdom around me. Guide me carefully as I make choices about how to use my energy positively. Place your discerning touch on my mind so that I will think clearly. Place your loving influence on my heart so I will be more fully attentive to what is really of value. Teach me how to hear your voice, to be aware of what is in my mind and heart, to attend to your wisdom in those around me, to acknowledge my intuitions and ponder my dreams, to listen to the earth and all of life, for in each piece of existence you are guiding me. Guide of my life, thank you for all you have given to me. Reveal my spiritual path and direct me in the living of it. Lead me to inner peace and oneness with you. Amen.
Amen. Oh, Joyce, it's such a gift, you know, to think of Jesus as friend, but Jesus as guide who walks with us, you know, every step of the way, and who each one of our journeys is unique and marvelous and filled with that beauty, and that we're invited, as I'm listening to you speak about Lent, you know, we're invited not only to journey with Jesus, but to journey with one another, yeah, with the very human community, yes, that we belong to,
yes,
and to find a path forward.
Well, you know, and when you say journey with one another, that's another, I think probably one of my most favorite, if I could use that word, one of my most meaningful theological parts of the Gospels is Matthew 25. I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me to drink. I was naked and you clothed me. I was in prison. You came to visit me. And it's that whole thing is that it's the Christ in one another. It's that, that is when we're with one another. We aren't just with ourselves. We also, we're bringing with us this core presence that we have, this presence of love. And every person that we're with has that. Sometimes ours is very masked over, and sometimes other people's presence of the Christ is very masked over, and we're not aware of that, but it is there. And, you know, that could be another Lenten intention, is that I wake in the morning, I'm going to look for how I think that this Christ is present, if the qualities of Christ are present in another person. Mm-hmm. And that can be very unifying, you know. Now, I will say this, that I don't think I'm strong enough to do this Lent, but if I could do that with every politician that I don't like, that would be major for me, but I'm going to have to go kind of easy on that, I think. But I do want to do it, you know, I want to be there with it, but I'm going to have to start a little closer to home, I think.
Start small, Joyce.
Yeah.
Start small. Small is beautiful.
Yes.
But actually, I mean, no, it's, you know, it's very easy to think about, or relatively easy to consider this tremendous divine love is present in people who are far away, people I've never met. But when I hear people speaking in ways that offend me in terms of what I think gospel values are, that is really hard for me then to recognize and believe that within this person too dwells divinity. Mm-hmm. And it's just on the surface that we have these immense differences and these ideological and philosophical disparities among us. So, you know, I'm kind of tongue in cheek when I say that about, you know, I'm not ready to pray for these people or with these people or to look for divinity within them, but it's necessary to do so. I remember a long time ago, I won't mention the president, this has been years ago, but we had a president and I was having a really tough time with him. And so I was talking to my spiritual director about this, and she listened, you know, and I was going on and complaining about how horrible his decisions were and his attitude. And she listened, and then she picked up this little tiny, it was very small, about big as my thumbnail, a tiny little part of gold. And she said, would you just open your hand? And she placed it in there. And she said, I'm just going to invite you to pray for this president every day. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, I have to do this every day, you know, but actually it was such a good experience for me, because at the end of Lent, my heart had softened because I was able to see this person as an individual, and to recognize that we had great differences, but that he was also part of humanity. And anyway, it just made a huge difference for me. What she really was inviting me to was connect with him instead of disconnect. And that's a piece of Lent, I think, is reconnecting. So,
well, thank you, Joyce. This has been a really powerful conversation for me. And I feel that there's so many like nuggets of wisdom to take away from this for myself during this Lenten season. So much to pray with and reflect on. And I deeply appreciate that. And speaking of being on a journey, on a Lenten journey, we are going to shift gears here and take you on a lightning round journey. These will be rapid fire questions and, you know, just the quick short answer. First thing that comes to mind. All right. So ready, set, go. Joyce, who is your favorite saint?
Julian of Norwich. Mm. She was the one that led me to the feminine image of the divine. So
Joyce, do you have a favorite word or a word you're carrying with you into Lent?
Adjust. I have to keep adjusting to how life unfolds.
Do you have a favorite name for God, since you are someone who's created many of them?
Oh, I always pray to Sophia, which is the Greek word for wisdom, you know, and from the Book of Wisdom, Sophia. Mm. That was easy.
Make it harder, Colleen.
Oh no. Okay, here's a good religious life question, Joyce. Are you a Jeopardy person or a Wheel of Fortune person?
Wheel of Fortune. words for me. I'm a writer after all.
That's fantastic. What are you reading right now?
Oh, wow. I just finished Abraham Verghese's almost 700-page novel, Covenant of Water, which is phenomenal. And I'm into Stephen Charleston's beautiful little book, Spirit Wheel, which are reflections from an indigenous elder that are just so, so lovely. I always have a book of poetry going, Devotions by Mary Oliver right now. I've been reading quite a while, The End of Sorrow by Eknath Eswaran on Hindu verses. Can't think of the title of that book, but anyway, The End of Sorrow is the Hindu verses. Yeah. So
Joyce, how do you take your coffee?
I have to have a strong, bold cup of coffee in the morning, black as can be.
What's your favorite season?
Oh, my favorite season is autumn. But you know, I'm one of the crazies that I like winter. I love winter for the yin energy. It draws me inside. I like winter.
And Joyce, you know, you became a writer, but when you were a little girl, what job did you imagine having when you grew up?
When I was little, I didn't imagine anything, actually. I was too busy doing chores on the farm. But when I was in high school, I thought I would be a teacher. But I actually only taught in a school system for 5 years, but I think I've been teaching all my life in some way. So. Mm.
Great.
Well, Joyce, thanks for teaching us and for walking with us on this journey and being with us in conversation today. It's been really just a gift to be with you.
Thank you. Well, it's very hopeful for me to know that the two of you are doing this reflecting, and I love your vision and your approach to life. And I think it's marvelous. Really, I do. So I love being with you. And thank you for just stretching me there with your questions. So I had to think a bit. And it's really good. You know, because I think we do. At least I move along, and yeah, I do write my journal, and I certainly am reflecting. But I mean, you just to really go deeper is so good, and to have other people ask us those questions is so good. Yeah. I love questions. I think questions are so vital to our spiritual growth. So yeah. Thank you for that.
Thank you. And please keep us in your good prayers as we will continue to pray with you. And certainly we invite our listeners to check out your new book, Jesus Guide of My Life, as a wonderful Lenten reflection opportunity. And thank you again for joining us today. It's been wonderful. And we hope to connect with you again soon. Thanks.
You're welcome. Take good care.
You've been listening to Beyond the Habit. If you enjoyed listening to us today, be sure to share this episode with a friend and subscribe so that you never miss an episode. We appreciate any kind reviews you would like to leave us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram, or send us an email at beyondthehabitpod@gmail.com.
Thank you to our guest, Sister Joyce Rupp, for being in conversation with us today. Thank you also to all those who have made this podcast possible, especially our sisters from the Congregation of St. Joseph and the Sisters of St. Joseph of Philadelphia. Our sound editor, Angie Hayes, our music composer, Matthew Dolan, our producer, Elizabeth Powers, and our podcast coordinator, Sister Sarah Simmons.
We look forward to sharing more with you next time.
Woohoo!
Happy Lent!
If we aren't kind to ourselves and if we're not caring for ourselves, it's going to be hard for us to care for other people.